Welcome to the Fit 40 podcast, where we take all the confusing, conflicting fitness and nutrition information and break it down so that you can live your healthiest, strongest, most energized life. I'm your host, Brian Fitzsimmons. Let's get it started. All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome back. Another week, another awesome guest. This week, we got Jared Hamilton with us. He is the host of the Dieting from the Inside Out podcast. He's coached hundreds of people over the last decade, happens to be a blue belt in jiu-jitsu, and he's an expert when it comes to strategies as far as stopping self-sabotage, binge eating, emotional eating. So if you're struggling with that, this is the episode for you. So Jared, welcome.
What an intro. That's probably the best intro I have ever had. That's what I'm talking about. I love it.
I take a lot of pride in these intros.
It's good. And you have that certainty behind it. Let's go. I love it. That was awesome, man. I'm glad to be here.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. So I know that the big reason I brought Jared here was because when it comes to mindfulness, he's like the guy in our space. So we're going to dive deep on that. But before we do, I'd love to get the origin story because it does... I love hearing how people started and their unique journeys, because I was doing a little diving and it seems like you weren't like the type of kid that was like fit from birth, right? You weren't born with a six pack.
No, man. So my everything with my evolution, if we want to call it that, has been a complete accident. Like in a weird way, it's just kind of funny how that went. Because so I'll try to make it the shorter version, because I could talk for an hour and a half about the origin story alone. So basically, I grew up as having no idea what I wanted to do, like career-wise and my stuff. Because you're right, I did grow up a fat kid. I grew up struggling. I grew up like that kid that struggled. Like I was handed a Weight Watchers book when I was like 9, because I was the chunky kid, and I'm like, Mom, how do I lose weight? Because, you know, whatever. And my mom was always a Weight Watchers person, so she just handed me a Weight Watchers book. So I started counting points when I was just a little kid, or trying to figure all that out. So yeah, by no means did I come out of the womb with a six pack. And then, you know, go through life, you know, struggled most of my young adult or my young like childhood life being overweight and stuff. And then when now it's like we're in, let's say, high school and things like that, getting ready to go to college, all that mess, I figured out I wanted to be a physical therapist because I have a lot of musculoskeletal problems. So I spent a lot of time in PT offices and things like that. So I'm like, you know what? I think I could be a physical therapist. They make okay money. I could tolerate doing that for the rest of my life, which is totally a way to live, right? I could tolerate doing that for, you know, till I die. That's such a great outlook. But meanwhile, during that time, I got in the gym, fell in love with working out, fell in love with biomechanics and all the things like that. So that's what started my fascination with, like, not even like fitness, it was movement patterns. It's like, oh, this is dope. So, but then when it was time to go to college, I was going to go the PT route, going to be a physical therapist. And then during that, I found out you have to get a PhD. And for me, in my brain, I was like, well, $200,000 in debt for an $80,000 a year job, that math doesn't math. So I didn't want to continue going down that route. But thankfully, I found during my prereqs, I basically fell into a personal trainer prep class, essentially, where like NASM put it on or whatever with the university I went to. So we like spent a whole semester learning how to be personal trainers. It was literally like we had practicals. We like went to some gym in the city we partnered with, where we'd like train our classmates and build programs. It was dope. Fell in love with it. Fell in love with personal training. And it was kind of like, I mean, obviously it's not the same as being a physical therapist, but I'm like, it's kind of in the same vertical. I just see them before they get broken, you know? So went down that route, fell in love with training, built, and ended up getting credentialed and building my training business. And then one thing led to another. And then I ended up working at 3 different gyms. One was my own independent thing. One was like a giant YMCA. One was like a university gym. So all I did was personal train people. I was literally just like bouncing from gym to gym to gym. Sometimes in the same day, I would hit all 3 gyms with clients, while having part-time jobs to make ends meet because I didn't know what I was doing. So, at one time, I'm not even kidding, I was a trainer at those 3 gyms and a delivery driver at Papa John's and worked at GNC all at the same time. And on the weekends, like, help my dad in like construction or whatever. So like I was grinding like crazy. But it's so weird.
Clearly
it's like,
very lazy dude here, guys.
Yeah. Such
very
a lazy piece of shit. But it is kind of ironic, like, you know, being a trainer and a pizza delivery driver at the same time. But, you know, it is what it is.
Hey, I used to deliver Insomnia cookies. I mean, we got to do what we got to do.
That's right, man. You know, train people in the morning, deliver pizza at night. I get it.
How do you get clients? Well, I feed them.
Right. That's right. So then that all happened. And then one thing led to another. And I ended up building a pretty successful in-person training business. I eventually quit every other job I had. And I was a full-time independent personal trainer that I built my thing out of a local mom and pop. I basically paid them rent. And they left me the hell alone. And then I just built my local whatever. I became like the goat, like the local goat of all. Like I couldn't go to Walmart without like four people stopping me, which was perfect. It's how to build the in-person business the right way. So then I ran that for like 5 or 6 years, like did that for a long time. I've been coaching for like a decade, 12 years, something like that. And then I was starting to run its course. I was pulling, dude, 430 A's to 9 P's, like clients crazy all over the place. You know, 200 sessions a month. Like I'm talking about a crazy schedule. So I was starting to get burned out and all the things. And then I learned about this cool thing called online coaching. So the very first thing I did was I hired a mentor. I hired a guy who built an online coaching business that I wanted. So I'm like, can you teach me how to do this? And he did. He's kind of now like a kind of a legend in the coaching space, but he's a buddy of mine, which is kind of cool. So worked with him for like 5 years to get my business off the ground. And so worked with him. And then one thing led to another. And then I ended up scaling from then on out. And so now I have like a whole team of coaches and the whole nine yards. But then where the mindfulness stuff came in was about, I don't know, at this time, probably like 4 years ago. Because for the longest time, I built my business on like what I would just call sustainable fat loss. Like I was the sustainable fat loss guy. Here's how to drink wine, eat donuts, and lose weight and look good naked. Like that was the deepest my shit went, which is great. A lot of people need that. But as I went through my own journey of internal transformation, I got into therapy. I learned way more about psychology and human behavior and healing and getting to the root cause of deeper issues. I started to feel heavy about what I was doing. Like I knew I was helping people, making a difference, but it just didn't feel like my dream ran its course, essentially, is what it felt like. Mm-hmm. So one thing led to another. And I'm like, when I lack clarity, a mentor of mine years ago said, you just got to get quiet. You need to go spend some time by yourself. So I have this thing I do now about every quarter. I do what's called a Jared sabbatical, where I basically go get an Airbnb for like a long weekend by myself. My wife doesn't come, friends don't come. And I'm like by myself for days at a time. Just letting my brain it's like a long meditation, to be honest with you. It's just being in silence.
So it's like that concept of making space for yourself. You're literally 100%. Carving it out.
Yeah, 100%. It's to a point I do it every quarter now. Literally every 3 months I do one of these like little mini things.
I got to see if my girlfriend will go for that.
It's huge. Actually, my wife and I both found out we both do very well doing them. Like, yeah, we need, like, I think it's important to take vacations and things like that. But I think even in a relationship dynamic, you both need to be independent. And it actually works great for our relationship. Like, I have Jared time to go do Jared things. She has Shelby time to go make sure she's good. So then when we're together, it's the polar opposite of codependency. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but when I did that the first time, I live in Indiana, so there's no shortage of cornfields out here. So, so I basically got an Airbnb out in the middle of a cornfield, and I was by myself for like 3 days, and I had so much perspective. I had so much hit me, and I found, I'm like, man, what I want to do is help people with this inner game stuff. I'm like, man, I just feel like I don't want to talk about fat loss. I want to talk about like how to connect deeper with yourself and how to regulate your emotions. And that's what I want to talk about. But like my whole career and this whole thing I built has been around weight loss. But then I said, man, I wish there was a world where I could bring these both together. Wait, there, I can do that. And that's where this started happening, because in the background, I never marketed inner work, right? I never marketed it like I do now. But in the background, I was having clients do this. So what happened was, and this is where the origin story gets really powerful. So we would have clients come in, like Sally comes in, wants to lose weight. And so we're like, all right, let's get you to do the sustainable weight loss thing. And then I go, oh, fuck, Sally like binge eats every weekend. Okay, I got to stop her binge eating. Then I can get her back on the track to weight loss. Send Sally on her way, she crushes. Then Sarah comes in, same thing. She's like, all right, I want to lose weight. I go, all right, let's do this. We go down weight loss. And all of a sudden she's sabotaging because she has identity issues. I'm like, fuck, okay, I got to fix her identity, redo all that shit. And then I'll get her back on the track to fat loss. And boom, she's good. That happened every fucking client, literally one after another. It's like, oh, I can't do fat loss until I fix their relationship with food. Ah, oh, they can't fuck their, they have identity issues and belief issues and they sabotage and they know what to do, but don't do it. And they're not consistent. And they emotionally like all these things. I'm like, fuck, I got to fix these first before they even have a chance of losing weight and keeping it off. because I didn't want to be the coach that, like, people come lose weight, then they leave and they gain it back. We see that in the industry. I didn't want to be that guy. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, fuck, I've got to fix their shit first internally. Then I can get them to go on their way. But I've known how to fix this shit for a long time because I've been crazy deep in psychology and human behavior and personal development for the last decade. I've just never applied. I've always done it for myself, not for coaching. Mm-hmm. Well, then I'm like, okay, if I feel truly compelled to teach in this middle ground, and this is what happens in the background of our clients, I go, I think I need to completely redo my company. I think I need to redo everything. So in that moment, it was scary as fuck because I got a lot of stay in your own lane, a lot of like, no one's doing what you're doing and you're crazy. Yeah. I got a lot of that.
How many therapists were like, excuse me, pause.
But then, you know what one of the biggest demographics in my program is?
Therapist.
I was just on the phone the other day with a PhD in psychology who can't get her shit figured out. Because, and that's the thing, is I'm not saying like what we do is a replacement for therapy by any means. There's a code of conduct. There's a line for sure. But there's definitely the inner game piece of anything. Like if you want to have a great marriage, you have to go deep. If you want to have a great business, you have to go deep. If you want to have a great transformation, you've got to go deep. I always say, I don't get out of bed for surface level shit, because here's the problem. This is where logic kicked in. I could give someone the best macros. I could give someone the best workout program. I could design everything. I could give them the best blueprint ever. I could dial their calories in. I could literally feed them, literally make their meals and feed them personal chef style. But most people would still never make it. Well, then we go, why? Well, because they binge eat uncontrollably on the weekends. They emotionally eat after every bad day. They have this pattern of subconscious sabotage where, like, as soon as they make any progress, like they take something happens and they take 15 steps back. They have a horrible relationship with food, or they get their results and then they feel worthless, like they don't deserve them and they're not worthy of happiness. So then guess what they do? Then they ruin said results, right? It's this constant thing, man. And that's where I'm like, okay, I need to fix all of this, because I always said for years I wanted to make the biggest kick in the dick to the industry. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I always said that's what I wanted to do. And I wanted, because I always had this friction internally. I love this industry and hate it at the same time. Like, it's awesome. It helps people, but man, it also fucks a lot of people up, like diet culture, disordered style eating, all of the things. Mm-hmm. And that's when I almost wanted to leave. I almost wanted to go build a different business and like not do this anymore. But then I'm like, no, I'm being a victim and I need being a bitch. I need to take ownership and fix what I can.
Well, and that's what anybody who's been in this game long enough has had those thoughts of like,
yeah,
how nice would life be if I didn't have to deal with all this shit that is in the fitness industry?
Mm-hmm, for sure. But at the same time, this also, because of that, it also makes it really hella easy to stand out. Everyone on the earth mm-hmm. is selling 30 pounds in 30 days. And I'm like, yeah, how about we just like fix your relationship with food, so weight loss doesn't suck so much. Right. Like, because my content repels the wrong people. Like, it is not sexy and shiny. I'm talking about like, hey, let's lose weight slow, monotonous and sustainably while fixing your inner deepest, darkest secrets.
Well, I mean, your content doesn't just stick a flag in the ground. It puts cement down. It like really firmly plants it.
Yeah. But that's the thing, though, man, is because this is where I feel called almost to teach and where I feel most aligned with internally. And I go hard with it. It's why we're able to have such rapid results. Like, dude, we'll end decades of struggle in a few months. Like, it's not an uncommon thing in my neck of the woods to end like 10 years of binge eating in 4 months, or make more progress in 3 months than they've made in 30 years. Because we do, I've kind of coined the term, we call it dieting from the inside out. We do the inner work first in conjunction with all of the outer work, and it works every time. So
love that.
That's kind of like my weird little origin story.
Yeah, hell yeah. I mean, you actually knocked out like three of the questions I had for you. So you're making my job so easy.
There we go. Let's go. Well,
one of the big things that you touched on that I really wanted to discuss is the fact that we talk about the people that are in this population that don't quite fit into clinical level. Like, obviously, if you're at a clinical level of depression, of self-sabotage and things like that, therapist is the way to go. But I think a lot of the people we cross paths with, like, we can have a gigantic impact on and do things that'll get them going in the right direction to the point where they might not need to go to that level. And I think that a lot of people get lost in that middle ground. Would you agree? And like, what are some things that like identify those people for you that are like, we can help them or they need that next level?
That's a good question. So let me just say this. Like, I think everyone can benefit from therapy, right? I'm in therapy. I've been going to therapy for the last like 3-4 years. I just switched to a new therapist. Like, I'm like 3 sessions in and she's a fucking assassin. Like, it's incredible. So yeah. I think anyone can benefit from therapy. Now, as far as like where that line is about like, where do we help and where is it more along the lines of like, okay, this is out of my scope. I don't think it's necessarily this uber hard black and white line. I think it's very gray, or there's like, it's a, if we call it like a range, right? It's like, at what point does like white turn to black? Well, there's like white, then darker white, then gray, then dark gray, then really dark gray. Okay. That's kind of like charcoal now black, right? Like, I don't think there's this black and white line necessarily. I could be wrong, but my thing is I think a lot of people live in all or nothing. Like, I see a lot of people who struggle with binge eating and they immediately go to, I have a binge eating disorder, right? Or they struggle with emotional eating because they don't know how to regulate their fucking emotions. So and that's just what they've done since they were a child. So they're like, oh no, I'm an emotional eater and I've got this debilitating eating disorder that I'll never get out of. Like, it's one of my, like, I get a lot of flack from this. It's one of my, for example, my biggest issues with AA is if you like with, and I have friends who agree with me on this, who AA saved their life, where like AA still, doesn't change your identity. You still have to identify as an alcoholic, versus my friends who are no longer alcoholics. They go, I'm not an alcoholic anymore. How do you get on the other side of something if you reinforce it with an identity? I'm an alcoholic. I'm a recovered alcoholic. No, then that means you're still an alcoholic. And then what do alcoholics do? They go find their way back to alcohol. So if you're a binger, an emotional eater, I've got an eating disorder, and you're reinforcing that identity, you subconsciously act in congruence with who you think you are. And that's why we sabotage, right? Yeah. So we need to change the identity first and foremost. But here's the thing. I'm not saying binge eating disorders don't exist or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying. I think if you have, like, let's just say an eating disorder, like you are bulimic, you binge and purge and like that kind of thing. Yeah. You absolutely need to go to a therapist who's licensed, who specializes in that. Like, if someone comes to me and they're like, and they're in that camp, I will absolutely say, hey, I'll do what I can, but this needs to be in conjunction with a therapist who specializes in eating disorders. Our clients who work with us and a therapist, oh my gosh, bro, it's insane.
Yes.
But the thing is, though, I think a lot of people confuse disordered style patterns, disordered style eating with eating disorders. For example, I cannot tell you the amount of clients that we've worked with who have struggled with binge eating their entire lives, who they just had a bad relationship with food. They're always taught good food, bad food. So as soon as we go, all foods are neutral, then we start teaching them how to incorporate these foods in moderation, binge eating is gone and never get returned. Or someone who, let's say, emotionally eats. And so maybe even a therapist or someone else said, oh, you have an eating disorder and you're going to have an eating disorder the rest of your life. So then we teach them how to regulate their emotions. We teach them breath work. We teach meditation practices. We teach journaling. We teach inner child work on how to hold space for what you feel without coping with or turning to food to cope. And all of a sudden, 30 years of emotional eating is gone that quick. Actually, to be honest with you, for us, emotional eating is one of the fastest forms of binge eating that we can fix. So for binge eating, we actually have binge eating broken down into 4 parts. There's literally 4 specific reasons you binge eat. I've yet to find a fifth. But emotional eating is one of them, and it's one of the fastest to fix, because as soon as we find and teach how to handle your emotions in a healthy, therapeutic-like way, it's gone. It's completely gone. And that's the cool part. So that's why I think there's definitely a line. It's almost, I feel like the line of what we do and help people with on the inner game versus like, when does it go to therapy? It's like the difference between, well, a personal trainer and a physical therapist. People go to personal trainers all the time with low back pain because they don't have a strong core, versus like post-surgery, all right, you should probably go see a physical therapist, right? I feel like maybe that's a bad analogy, but I feel like that's a very similar correlation of like, what are the lines of a personal trainer to a physical therapist versus what we do to a clinical therapist? Like, I think it's the more severe of the issues, and depending on what specific problems there are. But like I said, most people that I talk to with this stuff, they were never taught the right way on a very basic level. Because again, here's the thing, man. I view it this way. You see the headspace sector, mental health, therapy, emotional intelligence, mindfulness, we'll call it over here. But then you have diet culture over here. Calories in, calories out, eat less, move more, carbs are bad. They are like on polar opposites versus they have to come together. Because here's the problem where most people struggle with, and this is where I developed my program, is you cannot heal through something that you avoid the trigger. For example, if I am scared of heights, climbing up the ladder is what triggers the fear. I can be zen as fuck at the bottom of a ladder, but it's when I climb the ladder, it's when the trigger hits because I'm in fear of death, right? The brain goes, oh, this isn't good. And that's when I get triggered at the fear of heights. But what if I said, what if someone said, I can teach you how to get over the fear of heights without getting on anything tall? That doesn't even logically make sense, yeah. Right? Because you have to, and then how do we face a fear? Or how do we get over fear? We face it.
Yeah. Because and it how involves, do you even know it worked?
Right, exactly. But it involves getting the level of the trigger. We cannot avoid and then heal through it. So with this stuff, it's the same thing. Most people, the thing that causes their binge eating, their emotional eating, their sabotage, their knowing what to do but not doing it, their perfectionism, their all or nothing, the trigger is weight loss, is the desire to lose weight. Because notice, people are all or nothing people and perfectionists in weight loss, but not at work. You know, you're start over Monday in weight loss, but you don't do that with brushing your teeth. You're you know what to do, but don't do it. Here in weight loss, but not with like your household responsibilities, right? It's because this is the trigger, but we can't, and I've seen this happen. I've seen people stop diet stuff. They're like, fuck weight loss. I'm going to go to therapy. I'm going to go to a food freedom coach. I'm going to go to someone over here, way over here to help me. And they get good. Then they go, all right, I'm ready. I'm ready to come back to weight loss. And it triggers like an ex-boyfriend. Because of course you're going to feel better because you went so far away from your trigger. I'm on the floor. I'm not scared of heights right now. But if you put me on the very tip top of my two-story house, my heart rate's probably going to flutter a little bit because I'm now in my trigger. But if I never healed through it and worked through it, of course I'm not going to be good when I come back to it. It's like trigger. It's like your ex-boyfriend or ex-girlfriend all over again. So that's why what we do, I think this is why for us, like the way that I teach it, it's a staged process. Like stage one for us, we call it dieting from the inside out, where we fix these things first while getting good habits in place around the weight lossy things. Then that merges into stage two, where we can actually focus on fat loss, but it's in the same container because we need a level of mild triggering to start to heal through these things and work through them. If you feel uncontrolled around food and once you start, you can't stop, taking the Oreos away doesn't fix anything. But letting you binge on the Oreos doesn't either. So then what do? We put strategies in place that make it impossible for you to fail, that slowly heal that relationship with that food. So there's this giant middle ground, man, that these two worlds have to be in. And that's where I lean into, is this middle ground. Actually, you know, that kind of thing.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, a lot to unpack there. Cause I mean, we touched on a lot of things, but the big thing that stood out to me is like the whole concept of identity change. Because when we look at surveys of people who have lost a crap ton of weight that have kept it off for good, what's the resounding thing that keeps coming up? Well, I am a new person. I'm a different version of myself. And I think that that's where a lot of people really need to embrace. It's like, we need to be this new person. So when it comes to that aspect of everything, when we're trying to solidify this new identity, like how long do you think that would take for somebody if we're talking about like the journey?
It totally depends. And that's the thing with this, man, when people say, how long is this going to take? Like, I can't tell someone. I mean, I could guess. I could be like, well, you're probably going to spend 3 to 6 months working on your inner game. Then we've got a pound a week average out. You have 50 pounds to lose. So let's just say 50 weeks. You know, I could estimate, but I think that's going to cause more of a blockage than anything, because as soon as someone feels behind, now they're in survival. They're like, oh, I'm behind. I got to do this now. Versus when someone's like, how long is it going to take? My favorite answer is longer than you want, longer than you think.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, man, it doesn't matter. Like if the way I frame it is like, if you had a kid that sucked at third grade, they just struggled with third grade. Are you going to force them into fourth grade when they're not ready? Or are you going to begrudgingly hold them back because rushing them will cause more problems? You need third grade shit to go into fourth grade. It's cumulative. So this game is going to take a lot longer than what most people want. But the thing is, it's what most people need, because if someone's desperate for their result, they're not ready for it. First and foremost, desperation is not the foundation to achieve anything. If I'm desperate to make a sale from you, you can feel it. And I'm probably going to do something dumb with the money. If a girl's at a bar and a guy is desperate to get in her pants, it's repulsive. You can feel that shit. So what do you think is going to happen in weight loss when you're desperate to lose weight? Like people say, oh, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. And I'm like, that's a terrible strategy. You should not be willing to do whatever it takes. What if I said I'm willing to do whatever it takes to build my business? I'm willing to cheat, steal, lie, be unethical. Well, that doesn't sound very good. You shouldn't be willing to do whatever it takes. I literally wrote an email for this product that I'm getting ready to drop. And I said, this is not for, I basically, one of the things I said, this is for you if you're cool with this taking, or no, sorry, this is not for you if you're willing to do unsustainable things. Because it's a totally sustainable thing. But like, if you're willing to do unsustainable shit, I don't want you in my program. I don't want anything near you. Because you shouldn't be willing to do whatever it takes. So that's kind of the way that I view it. So when people are like, well, how long is this going to take? It's like, well, longer than you want. But I always say this, when you do this game the right way, heal from the inside out, slow, sustainable progress, all the things, weight loss is fast. It's just not Amazon Prime. I've taken people and seen it happen. Like, let's throw out these numbers. Someone struggled for 40 years, four decades. And in 1 year, they're a different human. That sounds fast as fuck to me. It's just not Amazon Prime. Everyone wants Amazon Prime. Everyone wants, like, the scale hasn't moved in 2 days. I did something wrong. When in reality, this game is fast as fuck. It's just not overnight. Struggling for a year and being completely new in 1 year is fast as fuck. The cool thing is this is not always equal parts. If you struggle for a decade, it's not going to take you a decade to get back on track if you do it the right way. If you approach this from the inside out, you do only things that are slow and sustainable, you'll have the fastest results you've ever gotten. But it's just not going to happen in 3 days. But I would argue you don't want it in 3 days, because if you were to zoom out, if you could get progress in 3 days, you'd lose it in 3 hours, because it works on both sides. Like if you change something on this end of the stick, that end changes too, right? There's a law of polarity here. So everyone wants overnight results, but then they would go away that fast. So.
Exactly. I think we just really need to redefine our definition of speed, because like you said, 30 pounds in 30 days. Way too fast, but a year could be like light speed compared to a lifetime of struggle.
Yeah. The thing is, I would almost go so far to say this, like one of our core values that we coach with is having fun and being happy on the journey. Would you not rather a little bit slower journey, but you love every second of it? Like think of it, like if we put specific timelines, would you rather grind your face off for 6 months and lose 30 pounds and you hate every second of it, or do it for a year, year and a half, but you love every second of it. You have your favorite foods every day. You don't miss a single social event, and you had 18 months of bliss while losing the 30 pounds. And now if you're the person that says, nope, I don't want the 6 months, then I'm not your person. I think we have some work to do around that. I think we're a little bit desperate. I think the fact that we're willing to sacrifice that much is a problem. But I'm in the camp of like, oh, you're cool, like losing 30 pounds over 12 to 18 months because you're willing to, you want to be able to enjoy the journey. That's my kind of people. And you'll find those are the most successful, because how you lose the weight is going to look exactly like how you maintain it too. So.
Exactly. Cause I mean, let's be honest. We eventually get to a point where we're living how we normally live, and our progress is literally just dictated by more or less calories. We eat the same types of foods. We do the workouts and we push ourselves, but all the other stuff surrounding it, like the mental work, like eating high quality foods, it's already ingrained. It's not going to change the second you go back to quote unquote normal eating.
Well, I had a post that pissed off a lot of the internet the other day. And I basically said, if you have a list of diet foods and then a list of regular foods, then this is why you struggle with the same 20 pounds for 20 years, because it shouldn't change. You should, when you're dieting, you should, like, you literally should be the same, your choices should be the same, whether you're dieting or not. Which means when you're not dieting, you should have protein, you should have fruits and vegetables, you should have plants, but you should also have moderation in your favorite foods. And when you're dieting, it's the same shit, just less of it. You should still be prioritizing protein and whole foods and all those things, but moderation and everything else. If someone's diet strategy and their only way to lose weight is cut out entire categories of food or their favorite foods, you're fucked. You will never make it long term because it's not practical or sustainable. So. That's exactly. My prerogative, at least.
Exactly. Now, I think this is one of those things that's recurring with all the really good coaches in the space. It's like we're getting away from that old school mentality of you're on a diet, you're all in. This is that time to put in the work and go hardcore. Mm-hmm. When it's like, no, that's a really quick way to get a lot of progress and then lose it all really even faster.
Though that, in my opinion, that all came from like 70s bodybuilding. Literally, most of the bullshit that we hear from diet culture, it's from bodybuilding. But none of, like, yeah, okay, that's still a sport and it's an industry, But if you're not gonna get on stage and flex in front of a bunch of strangers, then stop following that protocol. Like, if you look at the model of like grind your face off, do all this unsustainable shit now so you can have this result, that's literally called show prep, where you're going to get down to sub levels of body fat, flex for about 5 minutes, and then get off stage and binge your face off. Like, if that's your vibe, have fun. But if you're an average Mrs. Jones who just wants to look good naked, feel better in her own clothes, and enjoy wine on occasion, you don't need to be following those accounts. You don't need to be following those plans. It blows me away the amount of people who are following. Like when I see people coming into like my ecosystem, and like we find out what they're doing, and they have a chest day, an arm day, a leg day, and they're tracking all their macros, and they have like they're doing like water manipulation, and they have a cheat day, and I'm like, are you prepping for a show? And they go, no, I'm just trying to lose 30 pounds for so I can look good in a bikini, or look good in my become comfortable in my own skin. And I'm like, why are you doing show prep? And 9 times out of 10, it's actually because their coach is a bodybuilder who doesn't know how to coach, and they let their plan bleed into their clients' plans, is what that is.
Yep. The ultimate sin in the beginning of coaching is when we end up giving our clients the same exact plans we're on or whatever. But a lot of people don't realize that, especially in bodybuilding, I mean, you pretty much just laid out exactly what I did when I was 22. All these bodybuilders that are in their early 20s, like, they get shredded. Like, I got down to 6% body fat and then gained 40 pounds in 3 months. Like, this is not long-term strategies.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is what's funny is even back in the day, I used to prep, like, I had a couple bodybuilding athletes. You can still do the same kind of stuff. I was having, like, my athletes were wanting cheesecake, and I'm like, cool, make it work in your numbers. And they enjoyed cheesecake with no stress, no sweat. We were working out as little as possible. Like, it's the same kind of stuff. So even the way, like, body, even from the bodybuilding side, like that stuff, that's not the right way to do it. Like, that's like such old school Arnold stuff before the internet and education, you know, but the problem is that's what's most profound in the digital space. So every average 48, mid 40s, middle-aged mom who's just trying to look good and feel good, with the greatest intentions ever, they end up going down that route because it's what's targeted at them. So it's not their fault, but that's the thing. But a lot of them don't even know there's another way. And again, it's no judgment. It's not it's not like I'm like condemning. We need to make this more well known that, like, yo, you don't have to do the crazy shit. Like, one of the most common things our clients tell us when we really hit the stride in fat loss, they go, I feel like this should be harder. I feel like I should be doing more. I feel like I should be eating less. I go, no. That's what diet culture taught you, you know. But most people aren't even aware. Like, the way that I think about it, an analogy I use is, imagine a dog who was raised as a puppy was raised by abusive owners. It just thinks all people are assholes. It's all it knows. A dog that was raised by abusive owners from day one, from out of the doggy womb to 2 years old, that's all it knows. It's like, oh, I don't know any different. Until it gets around an owner like me, who my dogs get couch and cuddles, and then they're like, oh, fuck. You know what I mean? So it's the same thing with diet culture, though. If someone grew up in like the 60s, 70s, 80s around diet culture, all they were taught is points and carbs are bad and 1200 calories and cardio and don't lift, like, shut down your emotions, grind. That's all they were taught. So from a mental conditioning side, that's all they know. That's all. Here's the deeper part. The brain views that as doctrine because that's the only way they've seen, we'll call it, success. But it's not, that doesn't get rewritten until they do something really uncomfortable, work with someone, let's say like you or me, who's going to do this the right way. And then they're going to see success doing it the right way. And they're going to go, oh, I didn't know this land existed. Just like the dog. So we have three dogs. My two girls were raised by abusive assholes. So it took them a while to trust me, the man, and like, I'd go to pet them and they'd like wince real hard. But then after getting experience of, oh, he's not going to hit me. Oh, his pets are actually kind of nice. He let me sit next to him. Then the brain goes, oh, we're not going to die. This actually might be pretty cool. And this is how we do it with clients, is when we have to really teach someone to unlearn all the old bullshit. It's one of the most powerful ways, is just to get them great results doing the action that's in the other direction of the old shit. So when someone comes to us and says, Jared, I'm scared to eat chocolate. I literally put chocolate in their plan every fucking day. Literally, there's this thing in coaching we call it, it's kind of a corny thing, we call it the gas station method. where I literally will tell someone who struggles with their relationship with food, I'll find out their favorite food. Let's say they love chocolate because everyone loves chocolate.
Yep.
And I'll go, cool. I want you to go to the gas station every single day and buy one candy bar. All candy bars are 300 to 500 calories. Actually, to be honest, they're getting even less because like fun size is now like this big. Like I remember when I was a kid, like Halloween candy was like pieces like this, but now it's like you could eat a handful for like 15 calories. Is stupid.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But we'll have our clients like, cool, go to the gas station every day and get a candy bar, any that you want, whatever your favorite is. Bring it home and eat it. Their internal self is like, no, carbs are bad, sugar's bad, I'm going to get fat. Okay, let that old self have a hissy fit. It's fine. It'll learn here in about 3 days. And we'll have the client do this. And they're scared as shit, but that's okay. That tells me we're doing the right things, right? It's just like, you know, to get over the fear of heights, you got to get on the ladder and it's not comfortable. That tells you you're doing the right things when you're uncomfortable. So then we have our clients eat their Reese cups in their calorie deficit. And then all of a sudden, after 4 or 5 days, nothing bad happened. The scale didn't spike or like the scale went back down. My favorite thing is within like that first month, let's say they lose a little bit of weight. Let's say they went from 190 to 189, 1 pound. Something snaps in their head. Something mentally goes, oh, I get it. It's what I call their come to Jesus moment. They go, I get it. Because what happened is we introduced their brain what's called irrefutable proof. They ate literally Reese cups every single day inside their calorie deficit and they lost weight and nothing bad happened. And it's literally like the brain goes, oh, we get it. Because what this is doing is it's going straight to your brain. It's going great to your, like your, the way your, the neurological processes, I guess if you should say, we're going to do, this is neural pathway work. If this was the old neural pathway, I think about neural pathways like a trail in the woods. This is the way. It's always been this way. It's carved out. You can tell it's always been used. Developing a new neural pathway is creating your own. It's scary. It's sticky. It's, you don't know it's over there, but you go down it a few times. All of a sudden you can start to see like it's starting to carve its way now. The grass is laid down and you're getting more dirt. And then all of a sudden that's the new way. That's all we're doing. And what's crazy is as soon as we have a client or someone who's struggling with these deeper issues, do it the right way. That's scary. And as soon as they see the smallest piece of results, or they just don't see anything bad happen, it's literally like something magical snaps in their brain. And it's what the epitome of dieting from the inside out is for me. So,
yeah. And I love that because a lot of people do get hung up on these trigger foods, the ones that they say, hey, I can't just have one. And when it comes to trigger foods in particular, I know that you got the gas station method. Are there any others that with people that really struggle having it in the home, what is something that you like to do with them?
So here's the thing. There's a few things. To fix your relationship with food, we need to change three things. Your beliefs around the food, your beliefs around the foods, your emotions and attitude around the foods, and then your actions around the food. You have to have the trifecta. So, for example, if your beliefs around food, if you actually think carbs are bad, if you actually think sugar stores fat, if you actually think whatever is the devil, you'll never have a good relationship with food. It's just because your relationship with food is like a relationship with a person. Like if I all of a sudden was told you are a fucking degenerate piece of shit, that's a wrong belief. Brian, you're a great dude. Like we've had dinner together. Like literally, like you're a great dude. But if I had wrong beliefs about you, it would put a dampering in our relationship. If I was just told by everyone, Brian, just he's a piece of shit, don't stay clear, Brian, it would dampen our relationship. But I know that's not true. So it's good, right? So we have to change the actual beliefs around food. It's just an education thing, right? We need to have the right information and not 1960s diet culture. The second piece, we have to have the right attitude and emotions around food. Because imagine a person-to-person relationship. Imagine if you and I were in a social circle. I'm like, yo, what's up, Andrew? Yo, what's up, Jason? Yo, what's up? Yo, what's up, Beth? Brian. Hey, what's up, Jared? Like, you know what I'm saying? If I had a shitty attitude towards you, it would dampen our relationship as well because that affects actions. A lot of people, where this comes out in food, a lot of people will say, Jared, I know carbs aren't bad, or I know I can have this. I just feel bad when I eat it, or I feel like I should, and I feel guilty. That's because it's an attitude and an emotional thing. There's a reason you feel guilty. Maybe our beliefs aren't fully there. Maybe you've had old conditioning where you've avoided it. So like there's something deep inside, right? There's more there. We need to unpack that. Then the third is the most important. The third fixes the other two in a lot of cases is you have to change your actions around the food. The reason the gas station method works is because it forces you to teach your brain you have control in moderation. Here's the truth. Everyone who says, I can't control myself, you can. There's just something in you that's relinquishing that control. Like if I said, hey, your whole family is going to get beheaded if you smash this whole pack of Oreos. Eat one. You would eat one in 2 seconds and you're like, I'm good. Let my family go. You wouldn't go, sorry, guys, and can uncontrollably eat it. You have it in you. The problem is you don't believe you do. Because here's the issue. When you lie to yourself long enough, you eventually believe it. Calling foods trigger foods, calling foods cheat foods, calling foods bad, saying those are my uncontrolled foods, those are my free foods, that is killing your relationship with food. That would be like me calling my wife a bitch every time I talk to her. Hey, bitch, how are you? Hey, bitch, will you make me a sandwich? Hey, bitch, how was your day? It doesn't matter how lovely it was. That doesn't feel good to say. It would hurt our relationship because all the other associations that go with it. So when we're calling foods all these different things, saying a million times, I can't control myself. I have family who literally will like pound like a candy in their face. And they're like, oh, I'm so addicted to this. No, you're not. You just are lacking some willpower and control right now. But saying I'm struggling with my relationship with food or I'm lacking control right now is an entirely different thing than I'm addicted to this. Like contrary to what every Netflix documentary says, sugar is not like cocaine. It's not how that works. It is not.
Well, I don't know. There's some twin studies out there. There's some vials being shook that show all that fat.
That's right.
I don't know if I believe this.
There's some Jaws theme music playing in the background of you know, these. But like, that's the thing is, but if you're avoiding foods, it's no wonder you're going to binge on them. It's if you have all this other bad behavior around these foods, of course you're going to fuck it up. So as far as strategies, we have to make sure our strategies nail all three of those. Re-educate ourselves, understand the truth about this stuff, and stop listening to diet culture dogma. We have to start changing our emotions. Like when you start to feel like, oh, I shouldn't have this. Why shouldn't I have this? No, food is neutral and you need to like catch yourself. But then the biggest one is you need to change your actions. Things like the gas station method works really well. A common one we see with clients is let's say you have a whole household of kids and a husband who doesn't care about this stuff and you're struggling. A really common one is that we'll have them do is like, oh, cool. That's all your family's food. That's not your food for the next couple months. Cause here's the thing, fixing your relationship with food, like this stuff I'm showing you, is a temporary thing. Cause then you'll get fixed and you will not struggle and you'll be able to have anything you want in the house. But the problem is you having the family size bag of Doritos, all the Oreo, like it's setting you up for failure right now. But those foods aren't bad. Those are just foods you are currently struggling with. No judgment, no big deal. So what we do to fix that is if you have a house full of kids and a husband and all the things, is cool. Those are their foods. Like literally take a Sharpie and write dad or Jason or Joe or whatever, whose name's on it. Those are not their foods. Mom still needs to go do the gas station method. If you want the chips, cool. You can have chips. You got to go to the gas station, get the little vending machine size bag of Doritos. Because what we're doing with here's the thing. If you struggle with control or moderation and things like this, if you really struggle with it, what we're doing is training your brain that it actually does have control. Because here's the thing. If it's in the past, your brain believes it's doctrine. It believes it to be true. If every time you've had Doritos, you went batshit crazy and smashed the whole bag, your brain just like, that's just what we do. And it gravitates to that. We have to give your brain a new familiar. But right now, if I just said, yeah, just have a handful and put it back, that's setting you up for failure. So when you don't have it in your house, that's step one. That's most people's means to an end. And that's terrible. This is just step one. Step two is go out and get the thing, bring it home and eat it and enjoy it. Because bringing it home is the most important piece. Because if you go eat like the candy bar in the gas station parking lot, that's fine, but it's different. Your brain doesn't think you can have the shit in your house. So when you go to the gas station and get the candy bar, get the mini bag of chips and bring it home, your brain is going, oh, shit, here we go. Oh, fuck, she's about to go at it. Wait, why didn't she binge? We always binge. Your brain doesn't know if you have the mini bag or the big bag. All your brain knows is we didn't binge on the chips. What the fuck is going on? I thought this whole time we're uncontrolled and we're addicted and we have no power. Hang on. This is a pattern interrupt and your brain's like, wait. Hang on, what the fuck? Because here's the cool thing. I'm about setting our clients up for success. You can't binge on what's not there. You go buy the single serving, bring that fucker home and eat it. Your brain is literally having a panic attack. Not a panic attack. Your brain's having a hissy fit going like, wait, we always binge. Why didn't we binge? Holy fuck, wait, hang on. And it's literally freaking out.
Yeah.
Because you've binged for 30 years and you just out of nowhere didn't. But then you go do it every single day. You'll go 30 days without binge eating, doing it, and your brain's going to be like, huh, I don't know what this bitch did, but she guess she's got control now. it's proving to yourself and your brain you do have self-control. Then over time, we'll start to bring the foods back into your house and things like that. And there's ways around that. There's a progression with it. But the thing is, that's the premise behind it. Now, let's say you can't go to the gas station every day. That's another one we'll get or something like that. This is when I'm a fan of giving yourself your hard line in the sand. If you have a bag of pretzels, you empty that bag of pretzels into a ton of little baggies of single servings. And you say, I'm allowed to have one a day. I'm allowed to have two a day. And you have the one or two. And that is it. Right? Where people go wrong is when they're sitting on the couch with the family size bag and you don't even know. Right. But if you go, nope, you can get anything in single servings, whether you go get the Costco box of Doritos, that's all the single servings you get. They sell Oreos in like two packs now. You can literally get anything, but you have to start changing the actions around this stuff, because avoidance never made anything better, because your relationship with food is just like a relationship with a person. If there's baggage, you have to have boundaries and communication. So, and that's all we're doing. So
100%. And I'm just curious, because I know a lot of people hearing this are experiencing that resistance already in their head. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if I could do that. And it's really that reflection of fixed beliefs. Now, if somebody has that where they're like, they're just so fixed in their mindset that I'm not that person, are you kind of like almost Hormozy-ish where it's like you got to outwork your beliefs, or do you have a different way of going about that?
Yes and no. First of all, here's the thing. The one thing a belief needs to live is certainty and evidence. So if you take away evidence or take away certainty, now you have a chance to dismantle that belief. It's like a table. If I have a table with four legs and I just unscrew the bolts a little bit, now it's shaky. Now I don't have certain, now all of a sudden it's shaky, shaky, shaky. Then the bolts start falling out, right? So for example, this is how I break people really quick of all or nothing mentality and stuff like that. When someone says, I'm an all or nothing person, I go, okay, is that what? So, have you ever been late to work? Or let's say someone's like, I'm an all or nothing person. And I go, cool. Well, can you give me an area outside of weight loss? You're an all or nothing person. And they go, oh yeah, my kids. And I go, okay. So little Billy, has he ever not cleaned his room when you told him to? And they go, oh yeah, all the time. I go, so what'd you do? I made him clean it. I go, oh, you didn't like put him up for adoption? Cause like, if we do the bullshit you do in weight loss, cause you're all or nothing, you would literally put him up for adoption like in 2 seconds. I go, have you ever, do you love every single room in your house, every color, every wall decoration, all whatever? No, we have this like downstairs bathroom that has this ugly pink paint. So did you sell the house, burn it down, get rid of it? Well, no, we love everything else about the house. Oh, so like you focus on what you do like, and you don't worry about the thing that you don't like that's downstairs. So why do you go, I'm all or nothing when you miss a workout? You say, fuck my nutrition, fuck all this. I'm starting over Monday. I guess I'm confused. All I'm doing is dismantling a belief and giving them evidence that maybe they aren't quite the person they thought they were. Because I'm not going to argue with someone. I'm not going to be like, oh, you're this, you're that. But I'm telling you can see it in their eyes when they do that. Or when they're like, well, I'm just the kind of person that I have to change my shit up every week. Otherwise, when I get bored, I don't show up. I go, so how do you brush your teeth? Do you brush your teeth the same way you have for the last 30 years? Probably start on the right side of your mouth, on the outside with the same. Oh, interesting. So why don't you have to change your teeth brushing routine every night? Well, I'm never motivated. I can only show up when I'm the kind of person that only shows up when I'm motivated. Like, do you love your job? No, my boss is an asshole. So why do you go to work? Well, because I have kids, I have to pay my bills. Oh, so you're not motivated. You just have really strong reasons rooted in avoidance of pain. Got it. So you see, so all I'm doing with these is this stuff is I'm not arguing with them. I'm just to dismantle a belief. You have to surround it with uncertainty and different evidence. And that's all we're doing. So this is why, for example, but it works the other way. Let's say I have a client who doesn't see their progress. Let's say they're down. Like we've all had clients and we all are, you know, in our head about our own stuff where like a client's like down 3, 4, 5 inches down pant sizes, but the scale spiked and they forgot they're crushing it. But I go, like, they're like, no, I'm not making progress. I'm like, you used to wear an extra large shirt. Now you wear a medium. I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. I'm providing certainty around, no, you are doing well. I'm providing the evidence. So that's part of it, breaking down that belief system. But everything like you kind of started with was, it comes down to your identity though, because we're on autopilot 90% of the day. We're on autopilot 90% of the day. But then the question is like, so what are we on autopilot to? right? A setting has to be made. It's who we think we are. So if your identity is a binger, an emotional eater, a procrastinator, I'm an all or nothing person. Oh, I'm not the kind of person that does that. Oh, I'm not the kind of whatever. You're not describing actions. You're describing a character trait, and then you sabotage to it.
Yeah, it's, you know, funny. As you're saying that, it reminded me like of a Charlie Weingroff quote when he would come in and do in services for my old place. He said, he's like, listen, if anybody's going to ask a question, you can't reference the person that you learned it from. You need to cite the mechanism, or like, you got to say why you're doing it. You cannot say somebody's name. And it sounds like kind of how you're saying, like, you can't, like, try making your case without saying I'm the kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
And only rely on actions or whatever proof you have.
Yeah. The way I think about it, it's the difference between a noun and a verb. Binge eating is a verb. It's something that you did. Not a big deal. Binger is who you are. Ooh, that's a big difference. Something for me that I recently unpacked in my last therapy session is I found out that a couple of the things that I struggle with, like outside of this stuff, like just in my own personal life, it was in my head, it was when something goes from a failing to being a failure in my own head. Like if I fail at something, it goes from the action to the verb, right? It's like, oh, I messed this up. Instead of I didn't just fail, it's who I am now. It's part of my character. I just found that out. And I'm like, oh shit, that's powerful, right? Because we have to audit like where our identity and who we think we are is. Dr. Joe Dispenza said it best: to change your personal reality, you have to change your personality, because we don't get what we want. We get what we are. So to get more, we have to become more. That's some old school James Allen, right? So it's one of those things where you have to audit like who you think you are, because that's what you're going to be on autopilot to. People will make 10% change, like the 10% they're conscious. They make like, yeah, I started losing weight, feeling better, but then something happened and I found I gained all my weight back. It's because you went on autopilot in the whole, I'm not good enough, I'm a binger, I'm the kind of person that took over, and then you got the things that they got. This is why your beliefs are so powerful. Your identity is so powerful. Who you think you are is so powerful, because it's what governs your entire life.
Absolutely. And I love how you got on that topic of, it's like, are you doing something? Are you doing an action, or are you that action? Because when you're doing, you have the power. Like you are now empowered to change what you're doing rather than you're solidified. This is who I am. Can't change it.
Just because you struggle with something, it doesn't mean it's who you are. Like, so say someone struggles with binge eating, that doesn't mean you're a binger. Just because you have a tendency to procrastinate, that doesn't mean you're a procrastinator, right? As soon as you identify as something, your brain guards it. That's the scary part. Is this is why people will sabotage to their failures, because they identify. It's like mother, like the relationship, your subconscious mind and your identity is like a mother bear. If you identify like, no, I'm a binger, and you go 4 or 5 weeks without binge eating, what do you think is going to happen? The identity is threatened, or so the subconscious mind is going to guard it and make you binge eat, because it's, oh, okay, we're back safe now. This is where we're supposed to be. It's fucking dangerous, which is why if who you are, who you think you are, is made up of all the things you don't like about yourself, you will be on a forever uphill battle. It's like a thermostat on the wall, like Ed Milet puts it. It regulates everything.
Yeah. And like you were saying before, how you could just kind of flip it on its head, you can use that in a productive way, where it's like when you have this new identity, then you could start saying, I'm the type of person that makes really good decisions. I'm the type of person that stays active most days of the week. And then you solidify the good stuff.
100%. Like a lot of parents in the house, when you see like your kid like starting to fuck off, you're like, you're better than this. No, you're a good student. You don't just not turn in your homework. That's an identity play. You're literally aligning the actions you want with who you want them to be. They're fucking off, not turning in their homework. You go, you're better than this, because their identity is better. So you're trying to pull them out. It's the same thing here. Like when you want to, like when, if you're listening to this and you go, you only show up when you're motivated. Now you're not motivated. I'm better than this. I'm not that kind of person anymore. And execute. Fuck yeah. That's what the kind of stuff I'm talking about. You have no responsibility to be the same person you were 5 minutes ago. I don't care if you've been this shitty person, this identity for the last 30, 40 years. You can change in a moment. We like to see it. Like we see the rags to riches or drug addict to like life coach. Like we like to see those stories, but you can change your identity and decide who you're going to be in an instant. Where most people struggle with, they have to have something in real life first. Like you don't feel like a nurse until you get pinned. You don't feel like a college graduate until you get handed the paper. I remember when I first got my personal trainer certification, I had a different swagger as soon as I saw the check mark, right? It's because I waited till real life happened to feel the emotions and take on the identity. But you don't have to have the thing in real life. You can literally decide in a moment, this is who I am now.
Absolutely. And I love that. That's why we're going to drop the mic on that one. But I can't let you go without asking one more question, because I want to be respectful of your time. I don't want to keep you too long, but basically what I've been doing is leave a question for the next guest. So I'll get that once we wrap up. But the question for you is from Taylor Temple, who was on the previous one. What's the most impactful transformation or experience with a client you've ever had?
There's so many. The one that comes to mind was, so there's one in particular that jumped to mind. We did a podcast on this. If anyone wants to hear the whole backstory and hear from her on my show,
hey, you give me the link. It's going right in the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the podcast is called From Binger to Baker. So, again, we talk all about this inner game stuff. Well, we had a client, her name was Heather. Heather is an incredible human. Heather loves to bake. I'm talking about like shit you see on like, Her cookies look like art, like that kind of, like, we're not talking about just makes good stuff. Like, it's beautiful. Everything she touches, like, she makes. Heather, it's one of her passions. She loves baking. You know how hard it is to bake and be a baker when you binge eat and you have debilitating binge eating and struggle with your weight your entire life. So, Heather turned out to be a client. She started working with us. We fixed her binge eating in a few months, stopped binge eating completely, changed her whole life, got turned around. And then all of a sudden she let us know that she's like, hey, I think I'm going to start baking again. Cause I don't binge anymore. Cause I remember I would feel so bad baking because I would always start to binge because I couldn't control myself. I have to try the cookies. I have to try the ingredients. I'm always around all the sugar, all the stuff. So I just like, it's something I've always loved doing. Heather opened up her own bakery. Like, I know how much it means, like building a business out of what I feel called to teach and my passions and things like that, and making a means of income out of doing what I love and what I feel most aligned with. So the fact that like she was able to do that for her because we were able to get her through her binge eating. So not only did she stop binge eating and lose a bunch of weight and has this crazy transformation, but then she ended up opening up her own bakery and stuff is pretty wild. So
that's awesome. I mean, as a coach, those are the real wins. It's not, oh, this person lost 200 pounds on my program. It's like, we gave them a piece of their life back.
Yeah, man. Oh yeah. Don't get me wrong. I love like the before and afters. They're great. Yeah. But like when I get a grandma, that's like, I can get on my hands and knees and play with my grandkids again. Or like, I was like running on the beach playing with my family and I haven't done that in 10 years. Like, that's the shit that gets me pretty fired up. So.
Hell yeah. Now, if anybody's listening and they're like, damn, Jared just dropped a lot of good stuff, I want to keep learning from him and see more and maybe even a little skit here and there on Instagram, where can they find you?
So if you like this kind of content, my show is called Dieting from the Inside Out. It's available everywhere and on YouTube as well. And then I'm active everywhere, mostly Instagram and TikTok at Real Jared Hamilton on both. Yeah. And then you can just find me there. I always check my DMs. So always a DM away. So yeah.
Awesome. And all of those are going to be in the show notes, guys. So just scroll down. You don't have to go searching. Click away. Highly recommend his podcast. I personally learn a ton every time I tune in. So go ahead and check it out now. Don't even wait on it. And if you guys found this really helpful and something really stood out to you, or you got that friend or family member that you're like, shit, they really, really need to hear this, go ahead and send it their way. But until next time, I'll see you guys same time, same place next week. Go kick some ass, and I'll see you later.